are back with episode 553 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, just wondering what we're going to do when all this snow melts and we have to go back to watching lots and lots of TV.
Yes, indeed, and I don't really worry too much about what's going to happen when we have to watch all this TV, because that's pretty much any minute now. Yeah, so... but we should hopefully get an awful lot of feedback for what we have to say. And when we do, we're going to go ahead and get into it. And that's what we're going to do in this episode, as well as some open topics. So, Edmund, if you have any general disclaimers that you can give?
Yes. If something comes up and you haven't seen it, we might spoil it for you.
Mm-hmm. There you go. It's that simple. So we're going to go ahead and get into some of the feedback that we received. Once again, our friend S. Elliot Fisher has given us a few things to think about. Let's see if he goes after you about the Americans again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think he will, though. This one going back
well,
to... So
if he starts saying anything about Person of Interest, then, you know... We might be in heavy SmackDown mode. But
I think he knows better than to go there. I hope he does. But now what will happen is we'll get feedback for this episode where he goes after Person of Interest. But that's okay. That will make things interesting. Let's go ahead then to this feedback, though, from show 640. And he says, I think what I liked most about the Supergirl episode Human for a Day is how the alien character Jem reminded me so much of Babylon 5's Soul Hunters. Since Warner's owns both properties, I wonder if one day we'll see a rebooted B5 on the CW featuring the Legion of Superheroes in place of the Rangers. What do you think, Gary? Gary's not here, but I'll just say, please no, please don't do that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, after, as much as we have heard, regarding Babylon 5 and the background and the completely dysfunctional nature of Warner Brothers and the fact that success in one division, like the DVD division, actually means that, the other divisions don't want to do something. Sadly, those sorts of crossovers seem, extremely unlikely.
Extremely unlikely. Yeah, I don't know. Have we heard anything more about Babylon 5? I'm just curious now that I think about it. I think there was a whole hoopla when JMS basically came out and said, hey, I've got the movie rights, and if it doesn't happen by a certain date, we're going to go ahead and do it ourselves. And then...
Mm-hmm. I think that date's come and gone, unfortunately. But...
This is why we can't have nice things, Edmund.
Yes, I know that. You know, that's something that, unfortunately, as Babylon 5 fans, we have gotten used to. But
all too much. But yes, I don't foresee any type of crossovers like that. And for that matter, I think that the CW right now is becoming the DCW. It has no intentions of doing anything but the DCW in the near future. Especially since, well, we'll get into that, into the discussion of it next time, but one of the real interesting things that happened with Legends of Tomorrow and the 100 is that the ratings were higher for those two shows than they were for the Vampire Diaries or the Originals on the same night.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. So I was quite impressed to discover that.
Yeah, although, I mean, we will keep our fingers crossed. I mean, certainly that was after a huge amount of publicity, especially for Legends of Tomorrow, where it seemed like, you know, their promos were popping up almost constantly on the CW and elsewhere, of course, across the various properties. But that's a good thing. I'm just saying, you know, it's like, no, they pushed for a big number and they got it. So I just hope they can keep it up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I certainly hope so too. I was less surprised for Legends of Tomorrow than I was for the 100. That surprised me.
Mm-hmm. Although I think classic case of a lead into, you know, a well-rated lead in, you know, does make a difference for the show following it, especially if they're in a somewhat related territory as those two are certainly.
Yes, indeed. Let's see. Moving on then to a different bit of feedback here. Still from S. Elliot Fisher. We have this regarding episode 642. While the publicity results for The Man in the High Castle were a win for Amazon, I felt it was a loss for the First Amendment. I can understand where the ad agency was coming from either way. The subway ads were going to generate buzz for the show. New York commuters have always been avid readers. You cannot find an express bus or train on a weekday that is not packed with people reading, be it newspapers, books, or now Kindles. Yes. Their campaign would have definitely piqued the interest of most New Yorkers to begin with without the commotion. However, with the controversy comes national, if not international, exposure for their new show. However, the fact that the government intervened to have the ads removed out of some perceived offense flies against the spirit of the First Amendment. Ironically, it was a state assemblyman who cast the first stone, and when the MTA initially refused to remove the ads, the governor overrode them. It's a sad day when those entrusted to uphold free speech are the ones to deny it. Yeah. What are your first thoughts on this one?
Yeah, well, this is, I know we didn't get into it in the show, but it was something I did actually investigate a little bit myself, because I know that was my initial thought. It turns out, I mean, this is one of those slightly thorny legal pickles where, much as we may think of the New York buses and subways as public space, it is basically being run by the MTA, as a result, it wasn't quite as cut and dried as I thought, because initially I was thinking the same thing as what right did the mayor, and I think the mayor was wading into it as well as the governor, that as it turns out that they're not really a truly completely public entity. They're sort of, it's one of those sort of quasi-public entities, kind of like the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey as well. And so it wasn't quite, they have the right to regulate what appears on their buses, in their subway cars. The arguments that there was a First Amendment right for it to be there, which I initially would have thought would have trumped any other arguments, was not quite as clear as I expected, and which I also found a little disappointing too. but unfortunately, this does seem to be a case where, at least from the legal First Amendment arguments standard, they did have the right to both put them up or take them down as they saw fit.
Yeah, I always get a little bit wary whenever the First Amendment thing comes out, because, I mean, all things being equal, the First Amendment rights are, especially around free speech and everything else, they're very specific, and things get thrown out an awful lot. But just because certain things are messy, like you were saying, Edmund, we don't necessarily have to throw the First Amendment at it. Mm-hmm. There are certain considerations that do need to be taken into consider, that do need to be taken here. And I don't know. To me, it's basically not as cut and dry, like you said, as it may have seemed initially.
Yeah. I'm sure this is completely oversimplifying it, but I think it's more along the lines of, if an Amazon executive wanted to wear a T-shirt onto the subway showing those images, and announcing, this series was coming on, then he has the First Amendment right to do that. But the MTA taking those ads off of the seats, you don't necessarily have a leg to stand on, say, it's my right to put that there, when it is a contract with between Amazon and the MTA and the advertising agency. So one of those little eyes of the needle to navigate through.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But I guess in general, it's, people get very touchy about this kind of subject, and I think that that's where it gets a little bit dicey. But I happen to take the tactic that you did, as Fisher, in part of your comment, which is the controversy took it from something that was very local and turned it international. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I think there were a lot of people that had no idea that the show existed until the controversy set in. And I'm almost thinking that, was this something of an intentional?
I think that was part of the point I was trying to make, yeah, at the time, was, I strongly suspect the ad agency may have gone into this thinking that, this would be a great idea. And then I'm virtually certain that they realized it was going to raise hackles, but went ahead for precisely that reason, because they knew it was going to get them coverage and press, far beyond what those few, you know, subway cars on, because I think it was even only on one line in the New York subway system that they were installed on. So, you know, yeah, its reach wound up being far, far greater than the actual campaign would have gotten to.
Exactly. But I mean, if that was the tactic, it worked. Because look at how many people have watched it, and it is coming back for a second season. So there we are. That's it for the feedback that I have here. I guess then we can move into some open topics. And Edmund, I'll go ahead and open the floor first to you, if there's anything that you particularly had of interest.
Yeah, well, there's – I mean, actually, speaking of – well, not necessarily First Amendment stuff, but people's varied reactions to things. On this past week, or last week, BBC America did start their the U.S. broadcasts of London Spy. New spy limited episode spy series. I think it was five episodes, starring Ben Whishaw, perhaps most famous currently as the current Q in the Bond series, but also a star of the Hour, a much loved by those of us who saw it, series that he basically had to leave because of his great success in things like Bond movies, did not get renewed, but it's quite an interesting series. I've just seen that first episode, but one thing that fascinated me was when it was shown in England a couple of months ago, it had some of the most didactically opposed reviews I have ever seen. It was for different reasons, but it was kind of akin to some of that extreme for and against reaction that the newsroom was generating when that was showing here. We had on one side, not that surprisingly, given the subject matter, we had The Guardian weighing in, calling it one of the best series of the year, and praising it to the skies. Then The Telegraph, which is the more conservative paper, or the most conservative paper, arguably, in London, having an extremely negative reaction, being quite uncomfortable about the subject matter. And the reason I've been kind of being non-specific until now is that's because Ben Whishaw does play a gay man who has gotten involved with another man who winds up dead, possibly murdered, and he's an analyst at MI5. Some of the criticism did seem to be as much focused on the subject matter, and then going even further into the fact that the head of the BBC who had commissioned this is a gay man himself, and it's actually his partner who had written this piece. So they were as much getting incensed at this nepotism and bringing this gay culture, you know, and throwing it in our faces. To a large extent, as much as one can tell these things, this was seemed to be one of those classic cases of the papers trying to generate as much controversy as possible, because the actual viewer response and audience response, as measured by things like IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes and, you know, these places where people do get to weigh in, has been pretty much universal praise for the series. So it was quite intriguing to see one of these cases of the papers, lo and behold, trying to make political hay out of something that most of the viewers, even if they were aware of the behind the scenes stuff, didn't really necessarily care about, and were just focusing on what was on screen.
When things get messy like that and kind of takes away from where the attention should be.
But all that was as much just to let people know that, yes, it is on BBC America right now. And actually, as you're hearing this, two out of the five episodes will have aired. But if you want to try and catch up with it, I would recommend it.
There you go. And especially with things getting a little bit busier here at this time of year, it's probably not a bad idea to try and get these in now if you had any interest in it.
Yes.
Yeah, so let's see. Anything else on my end? It's been a lot of just generally trying to catch up. And I did have a topic, but I think without Gary here, I don't know that I necessarily want to get into it regarding some of the noise around DC Comics and their future publishing in plans that they have discussed or announced. Certainly it's going to be controversial, but I think that it will at least be amusing if we wait until he can weigh in on it.
Oh yes.
Instead, I think it's amusing that this has become such a thing, and certainly it's not new as of this week, but it's something that has kind of blown up among the many people that I know. And it's just this whole idea of adult coloring books. Have you been involved or seen this around?
I am aware that it exists as a thing, but in terms of my circle of friends and acquaintances, it hasn't hit my neck of the woods. But I have been seeing the articles, and certainly even just when you're scouting around Amazon, coloring books do seem to pop up quite a bit now.
Yeah, and certainly there's a few people that I know that get a lot out of it, friends of the podcast and friends in general. And it seems to be really being touted, and I think that there's some value to it, in fact, as something of an anti-anxiety tool, kind of a centering type of activity, because you have to be, especially if you look at some of these books, the designs and the stuff that are incredibly complex. And so it's almost like just the methodical going through and doing this task that takes a little bit of precision and attention, it takes away from all the distractions that the anxiety can kind of bring on. And one of these maybe self-help therapy type of things that you have out there, but it's amazing to see that it does seem to get some credit for that. But it's just funny how it's now proliferated, because certainly, like I said, friends of the family, but then even here in my family, there been nights where that's all that a couple of the people here do is sit there with the coloring books. And it's kind of fun when you get right down to it, because I actually joined them a couple times, and it is one of those things where it's just like an hour goes by and you're like, oh wow, okay, I didn't do anything but sit here and color in a coloring book. I haven't done that in what, 30 years more. And but what's funny, and the reason that I brought it up, is not just that there's all these designs some of it is sacred geometry and all this kind of weird stuff that you could think of. But then now they're coming out with what I guess you could say is fandom related type of coloring books. And the one that I have that I think is absolutely hilarious is the official Game of Thrones coloring book. Yes, it is as twisted as you might think.
Other than the obvious stupid joke that obviously pops into my mind of, yes, and you only get the color red, right?
Yeah, well, that was my... I opened the box, and that was the first comment I get was, we're going to need more red markers. And, my daughter looks at it, and, she's seen enough of Game of Thrones that she sees it, and she just starts just... her eyes get this big, and she just goes, that is the most wonderful thing I've ever seen. But I just think it's amazing that there is this, that this is actually out there, first of all, and that fandoms have kind of embraced it. I think that it probably makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of people that are fairly, and this is not a disparaging comment at all, because we are in fact pretty deep in the fandom ourselves, being the kind of podcast that we are. We get into all kinds of fandoms between comic books and various TV shows and other properties, games and everything. But there is something of a high percentage of people in fandom that they go into the fandom into such obsessive detail because it is a really good distraction from some of the, anxiety and depression and other type of similar issues that they might be suffering from. And so for there to be fandom related adult coloring books that are made pretty much to help as a self-therapy for some of these things, I think that's actually really cool. And like I said, even for myself, it's, I picked up the Game of Thrones one, first of all, because it's funny. Have a great Game of Thrones coloring book, but I just think it's you get to enjoy something that is, that you're a fan of, and at the same time, maybe give yourself just a break from all the other nonsense that's going on. Today was a really good day for that, because here on the East Coast, I think I mentioned it in one of the earlier shows, we've got a massive snowstorm. There is nothing you can do but just sit and wait. So for some people, that's a really difficult thing to do. So something like this that can just help spend a little bit of time getting out of your own head, I guess you could say. And maybe coloring somebody losing theirs.
Yeah, no, but I
it is Game of Thrones again.
Yes, as much as we're particularly me, maybe going a little bit tongue in cheek. I mean, I think that's all very, very valid points. And also, I mean, as opposed to I do like the creative aspect of it, where it's not just going out and buying a piece of artwork or a piece, I shouldn't say that so much, but in terms, something that's been, sort of mass manufactured for the fandom. I mean, having this thing that other outlet that actually lets you use some of your own creativity and fill things in as you'd like, rather than having something just handed to you, I think is a very good thing, and a nice outlet rather than just consuming and getting all of this stuff, having a way of expressing yourself through it as well is very nice.
Yeah, especially when you have, just the opportunity to do something art related to your fandom, when you may not feel like you've got the confidence to do free sketching or something like that, or drawing in other regards. You at least can do something that you feel is like putting your mark on it a little bit. So even if it's just personally. And yeah, I would be interested in seeing some, just every fandom having something like this. I mean, certainly given the merchandising that some fandoms have, it might as well. But I know that there's just a ton out there. You can't go to a store anymore without finding either the art supplies or the books themselves. I mean, you go to Walgreens and you can get this stuff. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, but I'm just right here looking at, because of Amazon is where I got it, and I'm just going through and looking, and let's see, right here on the New For You page we have Doctor Who coloring book, Harry Potter, of course, Star Wars being big as well. So those right there are some pretty big franchises to suddenly have all this kind of pop out. So yeah, it's just one of those things that I find really interesting that this has become a massive massive new franchise, or not franchise, but just what would the word be for it? Just, I guess, is that really a Sherlock one too? Yes, a Sherlock coloring book.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, but I realize now that there's been the other thing of where I think there were people who were going through the Sherlock book, and I think there might have even been something in the game, but I think it was in the I definitely remember reading that somebody went through the Sherlock coloring book and sort of found where they were sort of wasn't a huge spoiler, but were actually as you were going through, and I think this is one where they had a bit of a puzzle element to it as well, in terms of finding different pieces on different pages, and it was actually revealing something that hadn't come out yet in the series.
Oh. See, now that's just wrong. But you can just imagine that, go with your various anime things too. I mean, that would be probably really popular to have a lot of different things. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. You've got the ones that are really well known. Attack on Titan coloring book would probably be huge for all ages. I mean, there's no end to how fandom can be serviced by something like this. So, yeah, I'll be interested in seeing how it goes. And hey, folks, you can go out and get a trade paperback of The Walking Dead, and since it's in black and white, it's almost like a coloring book.
But another one where you need lots of red.
Lots and lots of red. And whatever the color of tears might be. Lots and lots of tears. Anyway, let's see. Beyond that, I just, haven't really had a lot of time for watching other things. So, although today, of course, was a little bit of an unusual day, trying to catch up on some anime recommendations that I've been given over the last few weeks. But otherwise, trying to continue to catch up on comic book reading. I'm sure Gary would be happy to hear about that. But hey, DC just made it a lot easier for me.
Oh, yeah?
Again, well, with the announcement that they made that we're not talking about yet.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yes. So, but I am trying to catch up on stuff like Saga. And for what I've seen so far and what I've heard, a lot of the Star Wars books have been really good on the comic end, especially in terms of kind of leading into or informing some of the stuff from Force Awakens. So, looking forward into getting into that a little bit more again. And yeah, that's about it on that front. No new TV, really. Didn't get a chance to go. I did go out last week after we recorded and saw Force Awakens with some friends in IMAX.
Ah, yes.
Now, I know Gary recommended it. I have to second that recommendation. It was really well done. The 3D was not at all intrusive. There was maybe one shot that was like excessively done, but it was done more as a like, hey, we have this shot in the movie anyway. Let's make it really pop for you.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like a Star Destroyer just right there in the, you know, hanging in space. And they just said, hey, let's make this a really good 3D rendering of it. But otherwise, in the actual film, in various regular scenes, the 3D was not at all intrusive. It didn't bother anything. So it was extremely well done. And seeing it on the big screen like that was the big screen was quite an experience. And in fact, so much so because this was the first time that that we had a couple people in the group had seen this kind of film on IMAX. They had seen a lot of stuff from like science museums and other things,
mm-hmm.
but they hadn't seen this kind of film on IMAX. And it was just a revelation. It was like, wow, that's a really different experience. Like you don't think about it until you actually see, and you go, okay, I've seen the movie the regular way on the big screen. And now I've seen it in IMAX and I can now see the difference and why there's a value in paying that extra.
Yes.
So I'm sure that with all these superhero movies and everything coming out, there's a couple of those films where they're going to want to go back. So,
yeah, no, that's interesting. I mean, because I've been planning to see it again, and was going to take Gary's recommendation, and but I remember for me that when going to see Skyfall, not the last James Bond movie, it didn't seem worth it to me, I think it's certainly with that film where it wasn't. If anything, it was they were certainly, you know, yes, there's the subway train crashing out of the tunnel and certain big effects, but because that was a more introspective Bond film, it didn't necessarily lend itself to that sort of treatment, but I think Star Wars is now the one where I will give it a try again, and I'm sure it's going to be worth it this time.
Yeah. But I haven't seen that many movies in IMAX at all. So this was a reminder to me that there is that things have definitely progressed. I mean, it's very different than it was just even a couple of years ago or a few years ago. So yeah. I really want to see that. What I'd like to see, I guess, this year would be something like Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
That would be interesting to see there. And I don't know if I want to necessarily see the Batman versus Superman on that because I don't know that the movie itself is going to be what I want it to be. So I'm not sure that I want to pay more for it.
Yes.
But because it's the thing is that like with Force Awakens, I was perfectly fine paying to go see a movie a second time or a third time.
Right.
Because we really, really enjoyed the film. But that's the thing is we had already seen it. So we knew we enjoyed the film. So it was just to go to see it in this new format or in this other format where otherwise it's like, am I going to see Civil War twice? Mm-hmm. Probably not.
Right.
And a lot of these other films, I don't know if I'm going to see them twice. Star Trek Beyond, maybe I would just do it immediately because it's Star Trek. But yeah, I'm just trying to think. There's a lot of movies, but I don't know if which of those necessarily I would do in IMAX right out of the gate. So there's a question out for the audience is what would you see in IMAX right out of the gate? I mean, what certainly if I hear anybody say Independence Day Resurgence, we're going to talk. But come on, there are all these big movies. Like I know at least a couple people are probably going to say, I want to go see Deadpool in IMAX. Why? I don't know. But just go and see the movie. That's all I want. That's all I care about. But yeah, it's just like you said, it's a little bit of a crapshoot because you could go to something like Skyfall and think, surely this is going to be an enhanced experience on IMAX. And it turned out to just not really be one. And that's funny to hear because Skyfall was such a visually stunning film in many of its scenes. Where was the one that the one scene set that I still when I watch it I'm really impressed by just the cinematography of it. But was it Singapore or
I think it was Macau, I believe.
Macau, thank yeah. you. I knew it was in the east somewhere, but you know which one I'm talking about, yes. Where it was in the building and you've got the various billboards and other
mm-hmm.
light
mm-hmm.
sources. Yeah, it's really just dynamic and really well done. And I would have thought that seeing that in IMAX would have been a fairly amazing thing. But quite frankly, if it's not done for it, it's probably
Yeah,
and not going to be a big addition.
Yeah, and I think that was part of the issue, was that I think this was, it was one of those cases of where they weren't filming it with that in mind. So it was more sort of a, you know, the post-processing add-on. And I think it does tend to be less successful then.
Mm, yes, indeed. Anyway, okay, so like I said, I did that. And just on the front, I've gotten quite a present. I'm happy to say that, you know, the other game that was a big draw for me in 2015 was Batman Arkham Knight. And I've really had a hard time being to keep trying to, I guess every time I have to do those Batmobile missions, I just can't stand it. And I love the games, and I was a little bit worried that Assassin's Creed Syndicate would wind up somehow doing similar to me. But I'm happy to report that it is just probably... certainly better than Unity was last year, or the previous year. And I'm roaming Victorian England, or London. I've taken the whole place over at this point. But just running around, the architecture was wonderful with that, and just feel it. And yeah, I've gone through most of the side missions, and I'm now trying to get through the story. I know there's a lot still to do once the story is finished, but I guess I'm about two-thirds done, according to the approved map. But yeah, just having a real good time running around Victorian London, which is great. And there's even a pack that you play after the fact, which is the Jack the Ripper side story.
Oh, good.
Which is, yeah, lots of fun. Cause, yeah, the Whitechapel's right there. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Mm.
No Vorlons, though, as far as I know. As far as I know. Yes, they would be Templars, though, wouldn't they? Of course they would. On the other gaming front, one thing that I want to actually throw out there as a recommendation is a game that's going to be coming out probably a few days after this goes onto the feed, or when this goes to the feed, certainly a few years from VOG Network. This game coming out for PlayStation, Gravity Rush. Game for Vita a few years back.
Yeah, John, unfortunately, you just got you were getting glitchy before, but you just got really glitchy, so...
Do I need to read that then? Okay.
Probably, yeah.
I was just thinking that there's a game coming out just a couple days after this goes onto the Doc Network feed, and or hits our feed. This second thing is Ash. And the reason that I bring and first I had a game this and I enjoyed it quite a bit. And it's coming on the PS4 and it's remastered, maybe looks even better and plays better. I can't anyone not on this game. It's a really interesting on action platforming. The main character is a lot of fun. And I just played the heck out of it and just really enjoyed the whole game and the whole premise. So I believe there's actually supposed to be a second game releasing in Japan very soon. But yeah, I would recommend that one just from my memory of the game. It was one of the first games I played on the handheld, and I still remember it as being one of the highlights back during that time. So yeah, just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that still got glitchy through a large section of it.
Oh, well, there we go. Gravity Rush Remastered.
There we go. It. Yes.
Hopefully you heard a lot of what I just said, but these things happen. We are, after all, having a bit of a weather thing going on here, so who knows what's going on with Skype and everything else. Let's see. Any other things, Edmund, while we are here and wrapping up the week?
Yeah, it... Yeah, even though it has been a bit of snow day for me as well, actually the it's a bit of a broken record for me at the moment, but it's basically the Expanse has its hooks well into me, so I've been continuing through James Corey's books. I'm basically just about done with the second book and looking forward to moving on to the third book. So I'm just having a lot of fun reading about the continuing adventures of Holden and the Rocinante. Yes, I guess that's a slight spoiler. Yes, they're still around. The scrapes they've gotten into, they've managed to survive, and I don't think that is a huge spoiler for anybody who's been watching the show. But yeah, I mean, it's just reiterate again that this this is a series where the source material is just as good, if not better. And it's definitely a case where I've been finding it to meld very nicely with what they're doing on TV. I mean, yes, it does mean you're going to know where certain things are heading. But as I mentioned in the last episode, I mean, just the fact that the moment I saw the trailers, it was the way I imagined the book. I mean, they just kind of seamlessly coexist in my mind now, which is a very nice and unusual thing to have happen for a sci-fi adaptation, whether you have a small S sci-fi and big S sci-fi in terms of the network. So if you want to pick those up, they will definitely be worth your time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I wish that I had room on my shelf right now for that, but there's no.
Who needs shelves? I have digital editions. They fit just fine on my venerable old Sony e-reader, which I still use since I have not given into the Kindle.
Impressive.
Although it is hacked so that it does run the Kindle app, so.
Oh, there you go. I was going to say, the funny thing is that I did have a Kindle for quite some time, and I would have sung its praises, but I don't know if it's just because it's one of the older models and I didn't really feel the need to upgrade. But I did eventually just stop using it and started using the app more than anything.
Right. Oh, sure.
Yeah, it's and I resisted for the longest time because the nature of the print seemed to be a little bit softer than trying to read on the screen at night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is something to be said for the fact that the light from a tablet screen, it does disrupt your sleep cycle a little bit.
Yeah.
But then again, these days, do we even pay attention to that anymore?
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I do like the e-ink screen, except, you know, I do have one of the older models where, you know, no, I do need to have a light on, or some sort of light shining on it. I will still never forget back when I was reading the Game of Thrones books, and I think it was the third book, and I just misplaced the reader and couldn't find it and got the very inexpensive box set I'd bought from Amazon, and I had to find my place in the book, and I'm reading it and I'm going like, wait a minute, this print isn't as nice as it is on my e-reader, and it's a little small and I can't just hit a button and make it slightly larger and easier to read. It was my first experience of like, uh-oh, I seem to be converting over to the digital side.
That is one of those little things that just, those conveniences. And yeah, it's hard then when you pick up a book and they've decided to use pretty small print, and it gets frustrating because it's like, I'm stuck with the font that you gave me. I can't do anything with this.
It did also make me realize though as well that, I mean, there does seem to be far more variability nowadays on in the publishing world, where, and we all know, they're having their own economic travails, and the fact of just comparing this, I then deliberately was comparing this more recent Game of Thrones paperback to some of my older paperbacks, of which I've got some dating back to, many, many, many decades ago. And it was just sort of realizing, the paper's thinner, the print quality, wasn't as good, So there is this thing of where, just getting a standard bottom of the bin paperback may not be as good an experience as getting that more expensive trade paperback where they've taken more care with the layout and the print and the quality of the paper. And yes, it may be a few dollars more, or in the case of some trade, limited edition trade paperbacks may be considerably more, but there is a quality there that you are paying for, and that can be worth it in enhancing your reading experience.
Well, I think that we are going to go ahead and let this be a relatively short show for this end of this week. As I said, next week we get back into a really good tough schedule where we got upwards of 20 episodes that are spooling out that we're all going to in some way, shape, or form be trying to handle. And some of the interesting things, just going down this list, we have the series finale of Heroes Reborn. We have the premiere of Legends of Tomorrow and the season premiere of The 100. We have the season premiere of Black Sails. We have the return of The X-Files. We have the premiere of the show Lucifer, the premiere of the show The Magicians on Sci-Fi, and also, that's about it for all of that. Does it need to be more, I guess, is the question that I would ask. But, we have a lot that is spooling out. The finale for the first season of Man in the High Castle.
Yes, indeed.
So lots of premieres, lots of finales, lots of other things in the mix as we get deep into the, I guess, not quite spring season, but the winter sweeps of February. A lot of this stuff is going to be coming along. We have quite a few shows debuting in the next few weeks. So we're going to have to get to cracking on some of those. And so until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time. Watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.